It's time for this. They've had an incredible 40-year recording career. And now they're doing a tour to celebrate their 40th anniversary. They formed in Glasgow in 1977. And they've had a string of hit singles. I love this one. Perhaps I promised you a miracle. Perhaps their breakthrough hit. They are the one, the only Simple Minds. And joining me right now is legendary singer Jim Kerr. Jim Kerr, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Kat. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Did you think for a moment in 1977 that you might possibly still be around in 2019 or 2020 even?
Being the warm-up act for Lorraine Kelly.
No. No, you're never a warm-up act for anybody.
Tell her I said that.
I will tell her.
No, listen, the answer to your question is... We didn't even know anyone that was, you know, 30, 40 years old then. So the idea of the scale of time was beyond us. We thought if we could get through it the summer, we'd be doing all right. You know, we thought if we could get to go and play in Aberdeen and Inverness and Dundee and all that stuff, and maybe someone in England will book us as well.
Bright lights of Dundee, eh?
That exactly. So, but what can I say? We've been blessed. Great fortune.
You have many, many, many indelible memories, don't you, over the 40 years. But actually, you owe, and this might come as a surprise to many people, but you owe an awful lot to the Stranglers.
Well, the Stranglers, absolutely. The Stranglers gave us one of our first breaks. Or it was actually the Skids that gave us the break, because poor Stuart at the time, the Skids were out supporting the Stranglers. And Stuart injured his arm and had to cancel at the last minute. And all that sounds great because we got to step in, but what wasn't really great is the Skids were flying at the time. They just made their debut in Top of the Pops and everyone was dying to see them. And instead, we went on to the sound of our own footsteps. But we come off to quite a good reaction, and the Stranglers, yeah, I'm still friends with Jean-Jacques as well, and I just love the band.
I promised you a miracle. I mean, for me, that was probably the breakthrough hit, wasn't it? Because you'd had singles previous to that, but it was that particular song that suddenly got you huge commercial success, and then it was a string of, like, 21 singles that were all hit singles followed I Promised You a Miracle.
Well, certainly, yeah, the floodgates opened. As you say, we got on Top of the Pops, so that was back then, that was the thing. There was rules that kept changing, but prior to Promised You a Miracle, we had two or three singles that had just edged the top 30. I mean, like, you know, number 31, number 32, but didn't quite get in it. So each time, you know, we'd be desperately disappointed. In fact, our drummer at the time quit. He said, this is never going to happen. And in a fit of pique, went off to do something else. But patience is a virtue and all that. And I think sometimes it's just the right moment and the right song. And that was the song that gave us our first hit. Access to a broader audience, many of them who went on to support us for years and years and decades. Some of them still come but that was a kind of a launch.
So how different did it feel then? Because, as you said, you had a hit then with I Promised You a Miracle, so things hadn't quite happened. You'd been disappointed, I suppose, with the last ones, but then suddenly it felt different. How did it feel for the band?
Well, I think what it was, I said disappointment, but certainly, I think up until then we weren't quite sure if back then you were allowed to be a cult band. Now you just get kicked off the label. You know, you're either selling records or you're not. And if you're not, certainly with the mainstream labels now, you know, they won't hang around that long. But back then, you were almost, how could I say, you were allowed to sort of learn your trade. It might take two or three records or two or three albums, but you would be touring and essentially you would be honing your craft, and so as that whenever the elusive success came along, if it came along, that you would be kind of ready for it, if you're ever ready for it, if you know what I mean. But so in a sense, it all worked out really for the best, and I guess what it meant, it didn't change our lives. It just meant that we got playing two or three nights in clubs as opposed to one night, and then you get a chance, you know, someone will take you on tour, or then a bigger TV show comes along, or then you have your second hit, and then they maybe start to put you on the front covers of the music papers and all that. And if you do that long enough, people start to refer to you as a band of your generation, and
well, you were a band of the 1980s. I mean, it was an incredible decade to be and have all of that commercial success within that decade, because it changed things in so many ways. But Top of the Pops, I mean, I was a young teenager growing up with Top of the Pops, and you're absolutely right. Any band that was big at the time was on Top of the Pops. So what was it like walking on to the set of Top of the Pops for the first time?
Terrifying. Terrifying. I mean, now we've got these terms like imposter syndrome. You're like, what are we doing here? Oh, no. Just terrifying. And they were very, you know, when you do TV shows and radio shows as well, you know, the time is precious, so you're just on and off, and it's who's next. And you really, you know, you couldn't say, well, I didn't really hit it that time, can I do it again? You know, it was just like on and off. And we'd grew up with the culture, we'd seen all our own heroes on that show. So the idea that you yourself would be on there. It still is, even as I tell you just now, it's still hard to believe. That's how iconic the programme was.
Absolutely. 1985 was a massive year for music, of course, Live Aid. And it was a massive year for Simple Minds personally, because Don't You Forget About Me, that was a huge international hit from The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, well, funny enough, we're talking about Top of the Pops here, but the then big thing became, I'm sure you'll remember, MTV.
Of course. It broke several bands. I mean, if you had heavy rotation on MTV, chances were you were going to do something good.
Yes, and unlike Top of the Pops, it was kind of global. So, you know, if you could somehow have a song or a video that they would playlist, then, you know, people in Japan would know. Although they varied the things locally a bit, essentially it was a playlist that went around the world, so therefore you were in, and not only just in the house, you know, MTV was in bars and clubs and everywhere, so that was another level again. Another slice of great fortune for us.
It's mind-blowing to think that you've sold more than more than 60 million albums. I mean, you've had 5 UK albums chart number one, which is an incredible feat of genius, quite frankly. You've won an Ivor Novello Award. You know, I could go on and on and on. But what means the most to you?
The 60 million.
It's a big pie, isn't it?
I'm only joking. I always laugh every time. Every time we put out an album, it seems to go up 10 million. And I think, I didn't see the check. I didn't see that check. But listen, I'm not going to talk it down. Great. But yeah, we sold a lot of records. But, you know, it was wonderful to get a success. But you can't really think about those kind of numbers, because it's just too overwhelming. What was your question again?
What means the most? Because, you know, you got an Ivor Novello Award as well for outstanding song collection from the British Academy of Songwriters, Composers, and Authors.
I pull it back to life. I pull it back to two things: writing the songs, because that, you know, Charlie and I were working in the summer here. And in doing so, we passed our 250th song mark. And at one point, he turned around at me and said, I still don't really know how to write a song. And I said, neither do I. But you know, rather, we know how to write our songs, but we couldn't tell you how to write a song, because our thing is so kind of homemade.
Yeah, and that was actually just going back to Don't You Forget About Me, because you didn't write that one, did you? And you were a little bit cautious about recording it because it wasn't sort of crafted in the Simple Minds way.
Absolutely. We not only did we not write it, we thought the ones we were working on at that time were better than it. And so we thought, what's the big deal? And this isn't ours. And why would we record someone else's song and all of that stuff? And of course, when it was explained that, no, this is for a movie and it's written for the script. And we still didn't jump on it until we met the people involved and essentially really liked them. And thought, well, you know, give it a go. It was that kind of attitude, and we'll see what happens. And it was, as soon as we plugged in and we brought our own arrangement to it, we could see that there's something going on here.
Wasn't it Chrissie Hynde, in fact, that, you know, shook you a little, you know, and banged your heads together and said, you know, look, boys, this is, you know, you've got to do this.
I think there's some truth in that. I think we're having meetings in the house, and she's like, get on with it, you know, it's a song, do it, it'll work, so it doesn't work. And that pretty much was the attitude. But certainly, in answer to your questions, the things that's meant the most has been writing the songs, and then, because they kind of co-joined, is playing them live, getting out in front of a live audience, dealing with the challenge of trying to become a great live band. And indeed, making those audiences happy and turning them away at the end of the night where they've felt it's not only been worthwhile, but they want to come back again and again.
But the success of any band, I think, there are many components, but one of the components is the front man, of which you are that. You have a swagger, you have a presence, you own a stage, Jim. But when you come off stage, do you still have that swagger? Do you still have that presence? Or do you just go home and, you know, have a drink and read the paper?
Yes. I mean, do you think the dog cares that I've been on stage? Or you know, it's like... go back and the boiler isn't working and all those great things that just make you glad to be home. The milk, I forgot to empty the fridge before we went away on tour there. No, it's great to have a coexistence. It really is. I mean, it's fantastic to do what we do, but it's brought us great lifestyles as well. And we try to make the most of both. But you're right. I mean, there is a level of success, I think, that you definitely want. And then you don't get anything for nothing, because with that success and with that fame, things can change and things can get out of proportion. And for some people, it can be hard to manage both, because you're not the same. Hopefully you're not the same person as you are parading around on stage. So when you go home, you want to fit in again. You want to be with your pals, and you want to do the things that you do, and you want to have kids, and, you know, the schools, and there's all that stuff. And I think if there's a success, it's having both, or having the good sense of that both. And it took a wee bit time to get to grips with that, but I think we've managed that quite well.
I'm sure the dog is very grateful for its better class of dog biscuit.
Well, that's what I tell it. Don't go on a huff with me, because I'm going on tour, pal, because you'll be getting the benefits.
Does the dog get in a huff? Because you find that, don't you, if you go away for a period of time.
As soon as the case comes out, we're talking about it before he came on, as soon as the suitcase comes out, you know, she goes in a corner and turns her back and, you know, I thought you loved me.
Yeah. One of our family dogs stomped up the stairs the other day, because it was really annoyed that my brother wasn't going to be back for a few days. And he is the official owner of the dog, but he stomped up the stairs.
Was letting you know, yeah, in a huff.
You played Cornbury 5 years ago here in this beautiful county of Oxfordshire.
Yeah, lovely. What a great little festival that is. Well, it's not a little festival, it's big. It was great. And I still have I've still got the poster for it on one of the walls in the office.
Oh, that's a lovely memory, isn't it? I'm glad that you have a bit of Oxfordshire in your office.
Oh, yeah, it's great. That's a great festival. How long has that been going now?
Oh, it must be 14 years-ish, something like that. It's very well established and very, very loved, and nearly ended after you played it, in fact, but then it was brought back.
You know what I remember from that? Because, I mean, they have all those lovely food vans and all that too, don't they? And don't ask me why. We're gone there and phoned, you know, yeah, the guy from the crew bus phoned up. They said, oh, I've been down, what are you doing? I've been here all day. But there's this amazing van that sells toast and cheese. I mean, we can sell toast and cheese. We'll sell toast and cheese, but it's the most amazing toast and cheese. And all everyone spoke about the three-hour drive down was toast and cheese. You have this toast and cheese. And I was on stage thinking, I remember halfway through thinking, where's that toast and cheese van? Somewhere out there. I think it was some, what's the word we bespoke toast and cheese.
Yes.
But I remember saying, make sure we have some of that before we leave here, because I'm just getting hungry. I'm getting hungry again.
Well, you should reward yourself with some toast and cheese in celebration of.
But I also remember the gig.
Good. That's not just the toast and cheese. Wonderful. Exactly. Glad to hear about that, Jim. But exactly. Yeah, 40, the best of 1979 to 2019. And that is one of the ways that you're celebrating 40 years of Simple Minds. And Jim Kerr, it's been absolutely great to have you on the show. And you're never a warm-up act for anybody, but I will pass your love on to Lorraine Kelly and tell her what you said.
Tell Lorraine I was asking for her.
Thank you very much. Jim Kerr, an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.